Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Monday, April 11th, 2022. I'm Maggie Lake. And here with me today is Matt Perrone, the Director of Research at Janus Henderson Investors, and my colleague Ash Bennington, who is fresh off the Bitcoin Miami conference. Matt, it is so great to have you here on Real Vision.
Thanks for having me, Maggie.
We're going to take a look at where we can find opportunity in this market, but we wanted to get a quick update on crypto because that space is really moving today with ASH, because we're once again down. Bitcoin, Ethereum under pressure. Bitcoin down 7.5%, 9% for Ethereum, moving in tandem with risk assets, as we've seen, ASH. The NASDAQ off 2%, S&P 500 off about 1.5%, Dow off 1%, and we have the VIX up 12% on the day. So perhaps not surprising. But Ash, I'm so glad you're here. You and I crossed coasts last week, right?
Yes,
I was
indeed
in San Diego at the Macro Experience with the Macro Crowd, Real Vision Macro Crowd, and you were in Miami at the Bitcoin conference. I'm curious, what were people there saying about what we're seeing with this price action?
Maggie, the short answer is absolutely nothing. The first thing to say is this is a Bitcoin conference, not a crypto conference. So the folks down there are talking and thinking about Bitcoin, not over weeks and months, but over years and decades. This is especially true for Bitcoiners who flew in from all over the world to attend. So look, it's a volatile asset class, minus 7% on the day, minus I think 12.5% or thereabout on a trailing 7-day basis. This is a volatile asset class. This isn't the sort of thing that shakes people who are interested in rebuilding the financial system.
Yeah, and we were just talking right before it came on air. It's huge, right? I can't imagine the changes you've seen since you first started going. And it seemed like there were a lot of headlines, a lot of news coming out of it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the single biggest impact when you just walk on the conference floor and you see over 25,000 people, it has the feel of almost a music festival at this point. It's a huge number of young people who are incredibly passionate about effectively rebuilding, as I said, the world's financial system on Bitcoin rails. And also, I think it's fair to say, rebuilding the technical architecture of the web. Many of the Bitcoiners who are there will talk about the world, the web that we believe, that they believe we should have gotten, not an internet that's controlled by a few very large, Silicon Valley corporations worth hundreds of billions or even trillions of dollars. So there is definitely an almost evangelical feel when you get down there and you hear the conversations on the ground. You know, we were talking a little bit about price and how Bitcoiners are viewing this over a years or decades time horizon. Unfortunately, Maggie, you and I don't have that luxury.
Yeah.
We look at price action on a relatively short time horizon. I'm looking at my screen right now, Bitcoin dipping below the 40,000 level. By the way, it depends on which indice you're looking at because these aggregations of price are not, there's no national best bid, best offer on Bitcoin. So you may see a different price on your screen, even though you're watching us live here. I'm seeing about a flat line of about 40,000 right now. And to your point earlier, this is basically a kind of a correlated risk off trade that we're seeing more broadly with U.S. equity markets. NASDAQ off, I think, 2.2% or thereabout on the day. What we're seeing here is Bitcoin trading like a risk-off asset. This probably isn't surprising when you look at what's happening. The cost of money is rising dramatically. This is really a macro story. Yields are up dramatically kind of across tenors, across time horizons. In less than 40 days, the 10-year yield has risen 100 basis points, a whole percentage point. This is extraordinary. That rate of change is something that we just don't see in U.S. Treasuries happening that quickly. So what we're seeing here is a broad, across-the-board risk-off trade. I wanted to take a look at a chart because this is a really interesting one. This is a chart of the correlation between Bitcoin price and the NASDAQ 100. As you can see on this chart, those fractional percentages of a whole of one represent basically percentages. And what you can see is Bitcoin trading at basically a 60% correlation with the NASDAQ 100. That's an extraordinary level of correlation. We should point out this is precisely the opposite of what Bitcoiners believe will happen in the long run. They believe that this is going to be an off-the-grid asset, something that's not going to be correlated with traditional assets. And here we are. We're looking at Bitcoin trading like a high beta stock, Maggie.
Yeah, that's the sort of, you know, the funny bit about it. But we always come back to this at Real Vision, and it's a matter of time horizon, right, Ash? Like in the small, and this is why no one was talking about it at the conference, in the very near term that is happening. But the folks you spent the week with have a very different time horizon. I think that's what we have to continue to think about as we talk about the direction of cryptocurrency. Ash, I can't even imagine the lack of sleep that you're suffering from having been down there. I saw some headlines coming out of that conference. So we'll grill you about the fun part later on off camera. But thanks so much for coming and giving us that update. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Maggie. Pleasure to join you.
So, Matt, it's funny because we were going to start out by saying crypto's not really your area, but we're all paying attention to this now. We really are. You know, this is an asset class that everyone's watching. But I think it's fair to say it's not your main focus. So before we jump on in and cover some of the other asset moves we saw, and we did see big moves today, maybe give us a little bit of a sort of overview on what your focus is.
Sure. Well, maybe I'll start with what our firm does, Janus Henderson Investors. We're a $400 billion asset manager, global in scope, across really all asset classes, most equity asset classes, as well as fixed income and multi-asset, et cetera. So we're really a broad, diversified firm. And we have the whole gamut from real estate to value strategies. And we also are very well known for our growth leaning, our innovation focus strategies as well.
It's so important and fantastic that you are looking cross asset because there have been big moves, as Ash pointed out. Where are we in this cycle? When you look at what's happened with bonds, when you look at some of the concerns with equities, where do you think we are in this cycle?
So our base case is that we're coming up to mid-cycle. And you're starting to see mid-cycle type of behavior and the handoff between, you know, the early cycle acceleration to what should be moderation. This cycle is a little bit more complex because of the massive monetary stimulus during the pandemic, and that's distorting a lot of inflation-sensitive sectors, et cetera. So it's creating an extra challenge, if you will, for the Fed. So this cycle is rhyming with prior cycles, but has some important differences that we're grappling with right now.
And what is that difference? What's the main difference as far as you can see?
Well, the main difference is just really the inflation being so high and the Fed being behind the curve, more so than usual. Fed usually gets accused of that. I'm sympathetic to their plight. However, last year was probably when they should have started some of the tightening of monetary policy. And so they're getting a late start on that. So as a result, they're going a little faster, and that makes their path that they have to walk narrower and the risk of recession higher. So it's a bit more challenging than a typical cycle where the handoff is a bit smoother.
And we have been seeing that play out because we certainly have had a lot of the regulars that come on here and some, you know, really big thought leaders and money managers and fund managers. Some of them have started to change their thinking. Some of them, because of what we're seeing on inflation and the action of central banks, maybe moving away from some long-held beliefs. Others are not convinced that we are in a different regime. I want to, before we pick up, play a little bit of a clip of a conversation that Raul had with Eric Basmajian, founder and editor of EPB Macro Research, on this very point, the business cycle and the secular trend. Let's have a listen.
I think that if we look forward 12 to 18 months, I think that that chart of truth that you always point, I think it'll continue to prove true where that decline will still be in place. I don't think that bond yields break out to out of that channel and rise on a secular basis, because as the yield curve is suggesting, as some of my forward-looking indicators are suggesting, we're going to have a continuation of this downturn in the growth rate cycle. And that's going to lead to what looks like to be recessionary conditions. And we know recessions kill inflation, right? So I do think that once the cycle fully turns lower and recessionary conditions prove to be evident, we'll see those curve inversions deepen. until the Fed is forced to pivot, not because of higher inflation, but they're going to have an employment problem to deal with also, right? So when we look at growth versus inflation, when real growth declines and moves negative, Raul, then employment's at risk, even if inflation stays high. So the Fed does have a dual mandate that they have to deal with here. As far as do we break to new secular lows, I do think eventually we will, because these long-term structural forces are still very much in place. And I think that they're going to continue getting worse. And they're going to get worse because economic conditions on the ground continue to deteriorate. It's causing a larger downturn in the fertility rate. So I think all of these secular demographic forces are going to continue getting worse. Where we may move sideways is on the Federal Reserve's decision on whether they adopt negative interest rates or not.
So Matt, how does that fit in with what you're thinking? I mean, what are you expecting in terms of interest rates and the Fed? And does that mean that we are going to see a recession?
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Yeah, so there's a number of things to unpack there. There was some cyclical factors next, call it 12 months, maybe 2 years. And then there's some secular forces that Eric referred to. So to your question, you know, our base case is that this is a more of a mid-cycle slowdown. As I mentioned, the margin of safety there, though, is very thin. So we're watching it. What we need to see is inflation peak and start to come down as financial conditions tighten somewhat. Most economists that we talk to, our own forecasts, think that inflation will start to roll over. Tomorrow's inflation print could be pretty jarring, so be prepared for that. But as we move into the second quarter and third quarter, inflation should start to come down. Some of these structural and some of these near-term cyclical forces will have abated. And if we can exit the year with, you know, on a path to more normalized inflation, you know, call it 3%, then I think the Fed will have to walk back some of their policy, as your guest mentioned, and we'll have a more conducive monetary policy backdrop. That's our base case. But certainly the risk case, Maggie, is that inflation stays persistent near term, putting aside the secular forces that he spoke about, but that inflation stays, you know, persistent, in which case the Fed will have to be more aggressive, and that will be problematic for the economy and for risk assets.
Yeah. And speaking of those risk assets, we saw stocks get back, you know, gains. They saw that VIX up. I'd give back gains, should just continue to sort of, I think, work through some of the concerns, especially the NASDAQ. That was the leader down. We are entering earnings. What's your sense of what we are going to see in terms of who can pass through those costs increase and who can? Well, what happens to profit margins in this kind of environment?
Yeah, so certainly you're going to have the haves and the have-nots in the market on who can pass on those costs and who can't. Some of the more, you know, commodity sensitive in terms of input prices and input costs will certainly get squeezed on the margin line, and that's going to be a problem. And those that can't pass it on ultimately to the consumers. So you definitely want to stay with the inflation beneficiaries for now. I think keep a bit of a defensive nature, because I think we've got some time before this situation resolves. So we'll have some choppy trading You know, we came into this year feeling very cautious about the near-term market dynamic. We don't think we're out of the woods on that yet. So I would hold on. It's going to be about their outlook, though. I think the guidance is going to be especially important.
Yeah, and this is where things get interesting. I mean, the very, very sort of dire, stark tone that the Restoration Hardware CEO had, I think, caught many people by surprise. It made a lot of headlines. It made a lot of news. Hard to tell if it was sector-related because of the space they're in or not, but I think that's the concern. If we start to see a lot of similar comments. Listen, prices are going up everywhere. We haven't even begun to bake that in. What's your feeling about equities? I mean, does it feel like there's any support here? Or are you concerned about another leg down, especially if we're looking at something like the NASDAQ?
Yeah, I think I would be concerned about it. You know, we're not outright bearish, but I think we're more cautious in the near term because of some of the dynamics you mentioned. Bunch of cross currents, right? So we have these inflation costs. We also have cross currents between reopening and preferences shifting for consumers from, you know, goods to services, et cetera. So that's causing some noise. You've got geopolitical concerns. You've got many different cross currents. You know, again, our base case is that we'll see some slowdown. We're already seeing it. We'll see some more during earnings. And inflation we've got is still hot. So near term, things are going to be pretty cloudy, pretty bumpy. We're not sounding the all clear yet. Hopefully, as we get into the second quarter, as I mentioned, we get some visibility on the second half inflation picture and demand. We'll have a smoother backdrop from which we can hopefully build build some confidence in the market.
Yeah. So it sounds like be defensive. Sounds like maybe you're leaning value. What about dividends? Should people be? I know you focus on this. You have a report that you put out. Should people be? Is that something people should be taking into consideration here? And are those dividends vulnerable if profit margins start to get squeezed?
You know, not in the near term. We think dividends are pretty safe for a while, especially dividend payers are typically higher quality, et cetera. So, you know, backing up, you mentioned we do put out a quarterly report, the Janus Henderson Global Dividend Index. It's on our website. Every quarter we update it. Dividends are very strong globally. You know, the U.S. stayed strong during the pandemic. It didn't really affect them. They cut their buybacks instead of dividends. Globally, outside the U.S., there was a big cut to dividends to preserve capital. Those have more or less been restored, and it looks like we're going to power to new highs because even though all the things we mentioned, in the near term, earnings are going to grow. Dividends typically grow with earnings. And dividend payers are generally the strongest balance sheets. So you feel good that, you know, that's one way to play defense is to stay with dividend, and then you can go back on offense into other sectors. And that is something that you know, we've talked about, in our outlook piece.
Mm. What about technology? It's hard, you know, it's interesting when you listen to the clip we played, and if you believe that we're still in that larger trend, we've seen some of these technology names get beaten down, but do you try to pick them up here when you have this kind of inflationary rising rate environment, which is going to really punish companies that rely on future earnings that are, you know, that need that capital now? How are you thinking around technology?
Yeah, so technology, we think long-term is interesting for a number of reasons, given their innovation, which is really the best way to earn excess returns over a long period of time. So we like it from that perspective, also because of that secular trend of the declining rates. And I'm not sure that I completely agree that we'll have that secular downtrend completely intact. I think directionally, I would agree. I think there's some offsetting forces in the next 5 years or so that could stabilize that. But in general, we do agree that both the environment, the backdrop, which is the rate backdrop, as well as the power of the innovation in terms of their business models, et cetera, will power technology ahead in the coming years. But short term, I would remain tactical because there still is upward pressure on rates, even though we've moved up so far so fast, as Ash mentioned, we still have, you know, we're still really below where we were or around the same levels we were in 2019. So we're not high on any normalized basis here. So there's probably room for rates to move up a little bit. And so I think that could pressure technology multiples in the short term. But again, long-term tech, and in particular biotech, looks very interesting here. You're getting really, you're paying low multiple on their R&D pipelines, et cetera. So that's also looking very attractive in the medium to longer term.
That's interesting because it is an area that people look at. It is an area that's been beat up. It's been, you know, we've seen that whole area take a hit, but I think there's some concern about it being considered a risk asset and getting swamped if we see concerns enter the market. Do you think it's going to start trading on fundamentals? How's the best way to play that? Is it individuals? Is it to do a group of funds to cover yourself?
Yeah, I think that, you know, again, tactically, I would remain a little cautious to your point. I think that's a great point. We have to let the rates situation stabilize. I think when that dust settles, and again, we've been calling for that, you know, we expected turbulence in the beginning of the year here in the first half of the year. Let's just say, if all goes according to plan, the second half, we see some stabilization in the inflation picture and hence the rate picture. I think that will be a really good time to look at some of these innovative sectors, biotech in particular, parts of technology, et cetera, where, you know, you can pick them up cheap for what is a secular theme of growth and innovation. So something to watch for sure.
Yeah. And second half, you think you need to get some clarity on what's happening with the Fed, with the tightening of the balance sheet before you'd go in.
That's our best guess, right? For what is a very murky situation. Right now, that's our best guess. That so June, July, we should see the inflation picture stabilize, if not improve a little bit, and at least the path becomes more clear. And I should note, that's actually typical of mid-cycle, right? Mid-cycle, you see turbulence into the first rate hike, and then you kind of get an idea of how it's going to play out. Market gets more comfortable, and you start to see, you know, the late cycle gains that are typical 2 years into the 2 or 3 years to go from mid-cycle. So if that plays out as a typical cycle, you know, we could actually get much more constructive on the market in the second half.
Yeah, we are in that transition phase, or even though there's disagreement about what we're transitioning to, you know, it is we've got all that chop right now, so it is very hard to read through that. We've got some great questions coming in. I'm going to paraphrase a couple of them because they're quite long. I'd like to try to ask Casey Parker's from the exchange. I'm not sure you're going to go along with this. Casey is expecting a large banking crisis. After the bubble pops, that a new monetary system will be formed. I'm going to guess there's some digital asset background here, but I just wonder if you are concerned about banking or liquidity in the system at all. And then also about gold. Casey also asking about whether assets like gold would go up if there is some kind of, you know, we see some sort of fallout in the system. Looking at any of those issues?
Yeah, sure. I mean, on the banking crisis, it's a risk case for sure. I think it's a very contained tail risk, given how strong the bank balance sheets are. But certainly you're taking, you know, stimulus out of the system, you're taking liquidity out of the system. That's always a time with there is, are any banks that are in weak position, et cetera. And there always could be that, you know, contagion event of a bank failing that, you know, sparks a larger systemic issue. You know, we've done so much to protect our banking system from that we don't consider that a primary risk, just given capital buffers that are in place and other risk mitigation actions have taken place. And the same thing for gold. I think gold is, you know, plays a good role in the portfolio in terms of a hedge. As a small position, it's not something we focus on or advocate as a primary core position in a portfolio, especially if inflation is going to peak in the next 6 months, then you'll probably be better off in more traditional risk assets, which actually are beneficiaries of inflation. Equities generally are. They price in nominal dollars. So you'll get that inflation hedge, but I think you'll get it in a more productive asset.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Bo is asking about the correlation between increasing inflation and personal debt, especially credit card balances. How is the consumer situated right now in terms of what their balance sheet looks like?
And their balance sheet is in very good shape right now as we sit today. Wages are increasing. Unemployment's at unbelievably low levels given where we've been. Claims are, I think, at record lows for going back 50 years, if I'm not mistaken. So right now, as we sit, the consumer's pretty strong. In the contemporaneous data that we're seeing, the real-time data, we're seeing strong spending, albeit maybe softening up a little bit. They may pull in their reins a little bit, but that's not because of the ability for them to spend. I think it's more the propensity to spend during, you know, what is could be a little bit of rough sledding on the macro and a little bit of loss of confidence.
Yeah,
but I think in consumers are generally in pretty good shape here.
Their wages are rising, but it's not keeping up with inflation, right?
Well, it won't if this inflation sticks, right? If this was an impulse that then declines, then I think they'll be okay. And again, I think they're waiting for that, rightly so. And everything comes back to that, doesn't it, Maggie? Everything comes back to the inflation, you know, decay function, if you will, right? How fast will inflation decline from here? If you're guest earlier was right in that clip you played, you know, it'll decline quickly. But if in our base case, it probably declines slowly, and that'll take some time for consumers to get a read on that, and they'll be more comfortable to spend. Again, if inflation's exiting the year at 3 or 4%, much better than, you know, 7, 8, 9 that they're looking at now, their wages are certainly going to keep up with that.
Yeah, and it's all relative, right? When it goes down, even if it's at a higher level than it was before, directionally, you feel a little bit of relief. So that may at the margin play with psychology. Ralph asking if you have any view on 20-year treasuries.
Oh, specifically,
I guess.
I guess I don't. I'm not a yield curve expert in terms of the different, you know, tenors there, but in long dated yields, we think they'll remain somewhat contained, but not yet inverted. It could invert, but, you know, not in dramatically yet, unless there is a policy error.
Right. This is the tricky bit, right? This is why inflation is the main conversation, because if it stays elevated for longer, potentially increases the potential for there to be overshoot by the Fed because they're working with blunt instruments, right? This is interesting. And again, do not know if you look at this sector, but thoughts on utilities. Do utilities have a place in the portfolio you look at? I'm wondering, given the fact that you really follow innovation as well. That would seem to be.
Given our scope, we follow everything. That's definitely on our radar for sure. So I think in utilities, you've got, you know, regulated utilities, and you've got the IPPs, right, the independent power producers. In terms of regulated utilities, they're going to more or less behave with the, you know, with interest rates. They generally tend to move with interest rates. They're regulated. Their returns are fixed. So they are bond proxies, as they're often called. On the independent power side, they're going to move with power prices. So they can be a nice hedge for inflation. So yeah, that's certainly something, and we've had some constructive views on that unregulated side for the past year as we've come out of the pandemic.
Joe is asking from the RV site, any specific sectors that stand out based on their dividend growth, or I would add growth prospects?
Yeah, so I think real estate comes to mind. It's not spoken about a lot, but I think real estate is really interesting here. They have the ability to pass through inflation quite a bit. They have rent escalators, et cetera. I think they're often overlooked. People think of them as bond proxies, but in fact, they do quite well during inflation. And actually, some studies have shown that they actually one of the few sectors that do well in stagflation. So I think real estate is overlooked here precisely for the issue you mentioned, which is the ability to raise dividends and pay a nice, healthy dividend. You know, of course, energy is certainly something they'll be raising their dividends quite a bit, given the free cash flow that they are generating at the moment. And large pharmaceutical in healthcare is also very attractive. They pay solid dividends. And as I mentioned earlier, you're getting good value there. So I think that's an overlooked sector for some reason is really has a lot to offer that I don't think has been rewarded by investors yet.
Interesting. And especially when you throw demographics in, right? If we're not in a pandemic, we're all getting older. So one way or the other, they're working on something we all need.
That's right. And it has a defensive character to it as well. So it really kind of checks all the boxes. If you think we're going into recession, you've got the secular backdrop that you mentioned, and you got valuation. I think that's really an interesting sector right now where all the boxes are checked.
Do you think that when you say healthcare or you say big pharmaceutical, will there be M&A activity, and would we expect to see them scooping up biotechs, especially with their share prices so beaten down?
I imagine there are a lot of calls being made right now, and it's going to be that bid offer spread, right? Is the biotech going to want to sell at this price? I would think, and I don't know for sure, but I would think a lot of big pharma is making a lot of outbound calls right now as we sit here today.
Yeah. So again, that defensive side, but with potential for some innovation and growth play there too, especially if they're able to get their hands on, an up and coming biotech player. So you mentioned real estate. I just want to be clear on this because we have a question from William on the RV site about housing prices in the housing sector. When you're talking about real estate, you're talking about REITs. And is that separate from, say, a home builder or someone with more residential exposure? How are you thinking about that sector, and what about housing prices?
Yeah. Thanks for clarifying. I was speaking specifically about REITs.
Yeah.
And industrial REITs, where they benefit from the e-commerce tailwinds. Multifamily is a great spot to be because of the passing on the rents, right? They're the beneficiaries of that. All these rents that people are paying go right through to the multifamily, and they pass that right through to the investor. So that's interesting. Office was cheap. That they've had a rally here as reopening has come about. But that's certainly, a sector you have to know what you're doing there a little bit more. There's going to be differentiated there. But yeah, REITs in particular, home builders are very different animals, so to speak, and they have their own dynamics. And there'll be a time for that as, if rates do plateau, home builders will get to be more interesting, especially at these valuations.
And we probably can't end without talking about commodities because it's so plugged into the inflation picture. We saw big gains in commodities and some commodity related stocks. If you look at big oil, some people think it has more to go. I suppose it depends on what your view is. Where do you come down with commodities? Are the best gains behind them? Commodity related names, best gains behind them, or do you think that there's still more upside here?
Very hard to tell. I mean, people forecasting commodities is very, very difficult. So, our base case is, first of all, I would note that they've petered out a little bit in terms of their returns. They've been more flattish. Some have come off their highs. So, that's worth watching. We've seen freight rates tick down. We've seen all kinds of leading indicators on the, that are related to the commodity complex that have indicated a cooling. And that gives me a little bit of comfort in our base case view around the inflation picture. Now that could be a head fake, right? I was just speaking to our energy analyst this morning, and he says, I think oils is gonna be bracketed, call it 90 to 110, maybe a little wider than that in terms of the range. But he said, if there's a risk, the risk is that it breaks out to the upside because the supply picture is so bad. And I think that's generally true for all commodities. The supply picture is not great, and that could cause a near-term squeeze. So I would say I'm encouraged by what we're seeing in there in terms of the broader read-through to the macro economy, but watch out for an upside breakout would be problematic.
Fantastic. And you read Matthew H.'s mind. He was just asking about, the connection between inflation as supply chain driven or, a result of fiscal stimulus and balance sheet expansion and the like. As we wrap up here, Matt, what's the most exciting sort of trade, or what do you like the best here as you look out in this very murky environment? What's your preference?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, healthcare checks all the boxes. So if I was going to be looking for a sector, that one is interesting here, albeit note that the biotech side of that equation is going to be challenged probably in the near term. So you want to average in there. But I do think healthcare is interesting. And I think generally, again, base case is that the mid-cycle slowdown, in which case you still want to own equities, think for the long term, stay invested, we'll get through this cycle. and use the volatility to your advantage. Because I do think typically you have a few years to run after the rate hike cycle starts, and assuming no policy error, and you know the Fed has some levers at its back, it's doing the right thing by starting to reduce its balance sheet to bring us into a more normalized, and hopefully we can hand off. Again, that's our base case, but keep some hedges in place in terms of commodity hedges in case things get away, as we talked about earlier. So, but the long term, we think it's the right thing to do. Stay invested. Equities are a great place to be in times of, rising rates like this, as long as they don't get too far out of control, which so far is so good.
Great advice, Matt, because people do get nervous and they tend to want to make big emotional moves. Go all the cash.
It's really bad right now. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, especially right now. Exactly. Matt, such a pleasure. Thank you for coming on, and so appreciate the fact that you're able to talk about across all of these asset classes because they are so interconnected right now. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Maggie.
Got to come back again soon. And thank you all for watching. Thanks for the great questions. As always, Warren Pies will be here tomorrow with Tony Greer. So be sure to tune in for that. In the meantime, take care and good luck out there.
What's up, revolutionaries? Thanks for tuning in to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. For more content like this, head over to realvision.com and get unfiltered access to the very best, brightest, and biggest names in finance.